When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week, we are getting into some live stream terrors, some TV broadcasts from hell.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kicking it off with a recent horror film, Late Night with the Devil.
Came out this year.
Yeah, very recent.
Indie box office smash.
Yeah, and everybody's been talking about it. Everybody's been watching it. Everybody's been enjoying it, I think. And so we figured we would talk about it because, one, we hadn't seen it for, it was like over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd heard there were like some slight changes from the version that we had seen. So we had been wanting to watch it.
Yeah. Also, always down for a live broadcast gone wrong. God damn, that's always the best.
Yeah. Found footage, talk less.
Yeah. And it's like different versions of found footage in both the movies we're going to be talking about, actually. They play with found footage in interesting ways. Late Night with the Devil is, in terms of a found footage movie, a weird piece because it's not so much found footage, it's just the broadcast that has escaped time. Oh, like a crazy story that you only hear about in the forums, like about this. I don't know. Like, I'm building a world in my head because it sounds like this was late, like this was a late night TV show that everybody knew about. So it exists in a world where something awful happened and everyone knows about it.
And it definitely has that very Ghost Watchy setup. Ghost Watch is a BBC program from, I think, 1990, that we've recommended a bunch on the podcast. And if you were a fan of Late Night with the Devil, I'm sure you've already sought that out. It's very similar. Live TV show, Halloween night, and obviously everything goes crazy. But the most fun about it is that the BBC, War of the Worlds style, didn't tell people it was fake and just broadcast it on Halloween night like it was a live ghost hunt. And shit went down. People were mad. People went crazy. People believed.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody doing the WNUF Ghost Watch Late Night with the Devil triple feature this Halloween season. That's definitely the way to go. Like we mentioned earlier, this is a newer movie that newer than we would normally talk about. But it has been quite popular. I feel like I'm pretty confident that we can get into it without spoiling it for anybody. But yeah, heads up, if you haven't seen Late Night with the Devil, you might want to check it out. It's available to stream on Shudder right now. And if you haven't seen it, here are three things we really like about Late Night with the Devil that are definitely going to be the cornerstone of our conversation tonight. I don't know why I'm talking like we're on a public access show. Like, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to have a message from our sponsors, and when we get back, we're going to talk about hypnosis, motherfuckers! That's good thing number one. This movie has a whole-ass hypnosis sequence. I fucking love hypnosis sequences in horror movies. You want a list? I could rattle off 10 right now. I'm not going to do it because I'm busy talking about a different movie, and detouring this podcast is a skill I have that I'm trying to cut out of my repertoire.
Yeah, the hypnosis sequence is really cool, and we'll talk about it later because I think it's a big element of the movie.
Hell yeah.
But how they do it is really cool. Just aesthetically, great hypnosis. They got that swirly black and white swirl.
Okay.
And I love it. Visually, fantastic.
What's good thing number two?
Good thing number two is we're going to stay on the aesthetic vibe. 70s TV show. We got sideburns. Mm-hmm. We got, you know, flippy bangs.
Flippy bangs. We got lots of orange and brown.
Lots of orange and brown. Eyeglasses that are tinted and larger than your face.
Man, the 70s just loved bad colors. No one wears orange and brown anymore unless it's an ironic statement.
I don't know who said brown was a neutral, but they were wrong.
You're like, you know what this couch needs? Brown.
Brown is not a neutral.
All right, and good thing number three, probably the number one thing people talk about when they talk about Late Night with the Devil. David Dasmalchian. He's the entire movie. There's almost no scene in the movie without him in it, including, oh, goddamn, this should have been one of the good things. The whole extended narration sequence from Michael Ironside. Just fucking the steel voice motherfucker who's here to tell you what's going on. The 70s was scary, everybody. We didn't have gas. We had wars. We were paranoid. Also, there's this late night talk show where some guy maybe communed with the devil.
So is your good thing Michael Ironside?
No, my good thing is David Dasmalchian. Fucking kills it in this movie. It's great. He's got so many shades. This character is as complex as anything you'd see in, like, Rosemary's Baby, which I think a lot of people have talked about when they're comparing this to other movies.
That's a good comparison. He is really good in this movie because he's a TV host, so we are watching him for all of the emotional reactions to everything that's happening with the guests, all of the supernatural stuff that's happening, how he's handling when something goes awry and they have to go to commercial break. We are following every single facial expression,
oh,
and he does such a good job. There isn't a moment where I'm like, honestly, maybe one of the most challenging roles in modern horror.
It's like and subtly challenging is the other thing.
Yeah.
Because in the face, you're like, yeah, whatever. He's a talk show host. Like, that's a caricature anybody could play.
But there's a layer. There's who the character is, and then the character is on. The character is in front of a live audience being broadcast to the world. There's a lot of pressure. It's sweeps week. The show is failing. They're trying to save the show with the spectacular Halloween night broadcast.
Yep.
So there's a lot of layers and nuance to the facial expressions. There's the real emotions, then there's the masked emotions, and then there's also, we've gone to a commercial break, so we're turning those emotions off, and then we're back from a commercial break, so we're back in front of a camera. Like, there's so much nuance that needs to be done just in the reactions. It's a heavy role.
It's a smorgasbord of motivations, right? Like, again, when you compare it to Rosemary's Baby, it's almost a bit of a spoiler. Like Guy, John Cassavetes' character in Rosemary's Baby, there are conflicting motivations. Ultimately, maybe not the guy we should be rooting for, but the person that we're like, oh, fuck, I really hope he pulls this off. There's a lot going on in that character. I'm excited to dig into it. We're going to cut to a trailer, and when we get back, we're talking about Late Night with the Devil. We'll be right back.
In 5, 4. Now, here's Mr. Midnight, Jack Delroy.
Oh, good evening, Night Owls, and thank you for allowing me into your living rooms once again.
Night Owls, we've got a heck of a show in store for you tonight, and I'm very excited for you to see it all unfold before your very eyes. I really hope you love it. Gosh, I hope you love it. Please love it.
I'm trying to host a nationally syndicated talk show.
And I'm trying to help you keep it on the air.
We all know how important it is to keep our sponsors and affiliates happy, but in my humble opinion, there is only one person who really matters in this whole darn crazy business. And that is you, our viewer.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa! Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind. Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. She's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do live TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first, as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Lily, can you hear me?
Good to see you again, Jack.
Lily, return to me.
This isn't about ratings anymore.
No one's going anywhere.
How could you let it happen, Jack? How could you let it happen?
Please be warned, anyone with young children in the room.
Go to commercial!
You're about to see...
You okay, Jack?
It's profoundly disturbing and shocking.
You get out there, Mr. Midnight. And you knock him dead.
Late Night with the Devil is currently sitting at a 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb.
That's pretty good.
97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
I gotta check out the audience score. 81% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Not bad.
And a 3.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Now, I do want to point out that when you are looking for ratings of this movie, Google will show you IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, and Shudder, which I think is...
A little biased.
A little biased. It's a fucking Shudder movie.
And you have to pay to watch it and rate it. It's a very select bunch who are rating the movie.
You gotta pay to watch any movie. What are you talking about?
No, but I mean, like, that's a horror fan streaming service. Yeah, so yeah, you yeah. already are predisposed to, like, I like horror movies.
You're coming in with a full star bump no matter what.
Exactly.
Do you think we came into this movie slightly biased? I don't know if slightly biased is the right way to describe it, but, like, oh, this is a live taping of a talk show that went wrong in the 70s. You're like, well, fuck, obviously I'm gonna love it.
Yeah, so definitely not biased, but, like, I already had the 3 out of 4 in my head before we watched it. I was like, yeah, this is going to be good. I knew nothing about it. And then you're like, oh, David Dismolchian's in it. I'm like, oh, this is even better.
Yeah.
Like, fuck yeah.
We're firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Here.
On paper, this is just my kind of movie.
This, like, is sweeps week for me.
Yeah. 70s found footage, live TV broadcast in quote unquote live time. Like, hell yeah. I am about this. Also, the fact that they're doing a live possession demonstration.
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that it's on Halloween night.
Oh, I love it.
Everything about
it. Love it,
love
it, love it, love it, love it.
Growing up, and it's not so much a problem now because horror's everywhere, but you get to Halloween and you have just, like, regular talk shows where people are wearing costumes, they're dressed like the devil, there's a little bat, and it's like, why can't we have this every night?
Oh, man, people don't understand what it was like to be a goth kid pre-internet because it was so hard. It was really, October was your only time where you felt like the things playing on TV were for you.
Well,
and the stores had things for you.
Right.
It was the one time of year where I could be out in public and be my weird self, and everybody was selling things to me. I felt among the people.
I want to be sold too. The other thing you gotta really keep in mind, this is, we're so fucking old now. All we're doing is like, you don't understand
you
how
don't
high
remember.
I was.
You didn't
we
have Halloween.
For months.
Halloween wasn't every day when I was a kid. It was only October 31st.
That's okay, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, Halloween wasn't just October, it was the week leading up to Halloween.
You were lucky if you had Beetlejuice on VHS and you could watch it in November. If not, you had to watch it on white TV at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., and 11 p.m.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so it was always nice to watch Halloween content, and this movie is some gold Halloween content for the 1970s. Because the best part about it is that I don't think most people involved, other than the guests, are happy that it's Halloween. Like, especially Gus, the co-host. I don't know, what's the official title of a guy like Gus? Announcer,
MC?
Right?
Yeah.
He's the announcer. He's basically just a guy that we throw to for reactions all the time. He is clearly out of his element. I think just the idea of wearing devil horns for him is like, I gotta confess tomorrow with my priest about this.
He looked cute in the outfit, though. He looked like he was embracing it. He was the cutest devil.
But just the mention that it's spooky time. He's like, oh, God. It hurts his heart to think about the idea of being scared.
I think there's also a lot of pressure, too. They're pulling out all the stops because the show is about to be canceled. So they're not just doing Halloween content. They're doing, like, extra scary Halloween content.
Yeah. In the opening announcement, David Dismolchian is back in front of the cameras. This is, like, the sweeps week of a return for the show because, as we learn in the opening narration from Michael Ironside, he's basically been, like, fighting for dominance. He hasn't quite broken through in the Nielsen rating. It's a real make-or-break moment.
And this movie exists in a quasi-real world. He is neck-and-neck fighting Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
So he exists in a real television broadcast world.
And it's the first season he's come back after the tragic death of his wife.
Which seemed to be very public because he had her on the show.
Yeah. Well, I think because she's also
She was an actress.
A big actress in New York City. Like, they were a power couple before power couples. And this season that they're currently in seems to be a little wild and crazy. Like, with the help of his unscrupulous producer, Leo Fisk, we've courted controversy. There's a great clip show of just all of the weird stuff he's been doing these last few weeks. He's arm wrestling a little person. He is storming off after being offended by a drunk guest. Like, it's a real
It gets very Jerry Springer-y.
Yeah.
We got like an animal handler with exotic animals and it's gone missing and it's in the studio audience.
Classic move, right?
Love it.
That's always scripted. That's never by accident. The producer 100% snuck that spider out of the box. And so yeah, we're leading up to a point where like we're going to be canceled. Nothing's necessarily working. The public has lost interest in him. He's got the stank of a dead wife on him, I guess. Like, I don't understand why that was bad. You'd think public sentiment would go through the roof.
I think it's hard to watch him, though, because he's sad.
Oh, you think that's what it is? He's just lost the passion.
Well, no, I think he's got the passion, but it's just, it's no longer fun to watch him because you don't want to pity watch a TV host. You want to laugh at his monologues. Hmm. He's damaged goods.
Yeah.
Which is cruel to say, but it...
And just to one of our good points here, you really see that in David Dasmalchian's performance.
Like, he looks like a widower.
He's still wearing the wedding ring and everything, but we've got...
Every time somebody mentions his wife, he looks off wistfully.
Yeah, you like a fucking breeze might as well run through his hair. Like, oh.
I remember wives.
And because it's Halloween, we have a whole cast of kooky characters.
I have to say, just judging this as a Halloween broadcast, the guests they chose, just such good writing. Perfect guests. Every single one of the guests, fantastic. I could have watched, if it was just that guest, the whole movie.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Nothing, Chris Stu?
Nothing crazy happened. We were just watching, like, it's a Halloween broadcast. It's real. Watch Chris Stu do terrible cold reading and the James Randi stand-in.
Right. Total James Randi here.
Yeah, we should mention that. So there is a skeptic who is the second guest. And he's a magician turned skeptic, or a magician and skeptic. Mm-hmm. He's of the belief that all magic is trickery, and if you're not treating it as such, you're a scam artist.
And similar to James Randi in real life, he has a check that he's willing to cut to anybody who can prove any sort of the existence of the supernatural or any supernatural ability. He's got it in his coat pocket. It's a $100,000 check, which he bumps up to $500,000. And of course, he's not going to pay it out because he never believes in it.
Yeah. And I don't know if we explained this clearly enough. James Randi was a real guy who this character is based off of, who had a foundation where that was a very real thing. If you could prove that you were a legitimate psychic or were legitimate in creating supernatural events, like if you could bend spoons or if you could telepathy, move objects, and basically anything in the paranormal sphere, if you could prove it, he would give you $1 million, his foundation.
Yep.
Nobody ever did. No. A bunch of people accepted the challenge. I don't know if you're familiar with Sylvia Brown, who is like a crazy famous TV psychic who was on Montel a lot. She accepted and then just like skirted him and never did the test. So much so that until her death, he had a countdown on his website about like 364 days since Sylvia Brown accepted the challenge and hasn't done it.
I've just got too much going on my busy schedule.
Yeah, no, if you're interested in James Randi, you should check out the documentary An Honest Liar. Great documentary.
You definitely, if you're interested in paranormal and you're
probably
also a
already
skeptic,
heard the name before.
But if you're also a skeptic, like, you will dig James Randi. I think he did stuff with Darren Brown. He's done stuff with Penn and Teller. Bullshit is a really fun series from the early 2000s that he appeared on a lot. Like, he was a fun guy. He died recently, which is sad, but I think his foundation still exists. And
I think
the offer is still there. They've just become a lot more scrupulous with who they accept to do the challenge because a lot of people have wasted resources. I mean, they've never given it out, so it only costs them money.
Well, I don't think there's much more they can learn at this point. He was great because, similar to the Carmichael Haig character in the movie, he essentially does a magic trick in front of you and then shows you how he did it. He approaches this the way a real medium or a real magician would, and then just sort of like peels back the curtain like the masked magician on Fox News in the 90s.
I guess I really appreciate him because I have a lot in common in the sense that I love the paranormal and the supernatural, but I come at it like a skeptic. Like, want you to show me ghosts. I want you to do all of these fun, spooky things, but like, I don't believe you.
Yeah, no.
But that's such a cool thing because as a skeptic who's challenging people, he's like, well, I'm interested. I'm among this community. Mm-hmm. But the difference between you and me is I'm telling you I'm a magician.
Yes.
I'm performing trickery.
Yeah.
I am doing sleight of hand in front of you. And that's the art of it, is that you know you're being tricked. You just can't see where.
It's the Nightmare Alley thing, right? Like, you never do the spook show. You think you're giving people hope by giving them closure, letting them talk to their dead relatives, or reassuring them that their son, who, again, this is from the movie, their son who's committed suicide very young, is at peace. You think you're doing something nice there. Ultimately, you're just preying on their emotions to get something out of them.
And especially to a lot of psychics, they have regular clients, and it just becomes this creepy exploitation of people's pain, where you're regularly seeing families so they can talk to their dead loved ones, and it's yucky.
Which, honestly, is all to say that every single one of the characters in this movie feels like a interpretation of something we've all experienced in our own lives as kids who are interested in the paranormal.
Yeah, and even just people who watch daytime TV or late night TV.
Oh,
like,
man.
We've all seen a Christu.
Yeah, daytime TV used to have so many psychics.
There were so many weird people on daytime TV because it was all spectacle. Like, my goth daughter needs a makeover. Like,
The real difference between daytime TV goth makeovers and late night TV is that every once in a while, maybe you'd see somebody rip their fucking stomach open and bugs would come out.
Yeah, that totally happened.
Yeah, that happened all the time. No, it never happened. And in fact, doesn't even technically happen in this movie. It is one of the absolute best sequences. We've got the skeptic who comes in and disproves Christu, and then later, as a sort of like final explanation to like all of the weird stuff that's been happening in the movie, he does a hypnosis sequence with Gus, the announcer. And this is a truly genius move in the movie.
It's, I think, maybe the best part of the film story-wise.
This character, Carmichael, hypnotizes Gus and makes him think that he's got worms crawling inside of him. And then he sees a worm coming out of a nick on his neck where he cut himself shaving. And then, he rips his stomach open and there's fucking worms everywhere. And then we peel back. He snaps his fingers. We're awake again and everything's cool. And what's genius about this is that because we're watching live TV footage, what the movie's doing is showing that you, the viewer, also got hypnotized. He hypnotizes everybody, most everybody in the crowd. He obviously hypnotizes Gus and people at home watching. Because we roll back the tape and see what's going on, and there's no bugs, there's no worms, there's no gore.
Mm-hmm. The first time it plays through, it plays through very authentic. We don't hear any of the hypnosis commands like, oh, you see bugs coming out of your neck. We just see what Gus sees, which is bugs coming out of his neck. It's done so well. And this is a moment where I think Late Night with the Devil is really taking from Ghost Watch, because Ghost Watch does that hypnotizing the audience in a sense that they are awakening spirits outside of the broadcast, because there's a call-in aspect.
Hell yeah.
And they have fake callers calling in and saying that they see things, you know, on the TV, like, oh, I saw something in the corner over here. But a lot of people are reporting scary things that are happening in their own houses.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, my piano started playing by itself. So imagine watching that, thinking it was real, and that you're hearing real call-in people who are watching the broadcast like you are live, and shit is going down in their house. You would be so terrified.
Like, oh my God, this is communing with the devil. Like, we've done something wrong here.
Yeah, like, I've awoken ghosts in my own house. Like, you've involuntarily played with a Ouija board.
Yeah, that's the genius of Ghost Watch, too. It was at a time where, I mean, like, live broadcasts weren't necessarily anything new, but playing around with the form and, like, the idea that you're in everybody's home. So it's like you're communally doing a seance. Genius.
Yeah, I'm saying communally doing a seance, I could watch 1,000 of these. So if we could just not stop doing these fake live broadcast TV series found footage films, I'm about it.
Yeah. Structurally, though, filmmaker nerd stuff, it's a brilliant move in the movie, because the movie starts to sort of devolve and the movie becomes unreliable, is what I'm getting at. The movie starts to play with form and like whether or not you're seeing what's actually happening. Like, the whole end of the movie is this sort of hallucinatory sequence. And I think it's really laying the foundation for that in this hypnosis set piece. Because now we're going back and showing you that what you're seeing you can't trust, and maybe what you're looking at isn't what's actually happening.
Well, and so we should tie in the demon stuff at some point, because by the finale, the demon has gone into the camera.
Yeah.
So we are definitely seeing a possessed footage, which is why I think we're also playing with time and old broadcasts. Like Jack Delroy, the host, David Desmalchian, he is going through old broadcasts in this possession at the finale.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense time-wise, but I think the fact that the demon, we see it in the static of the TV means it's in the wiring. Like, we got demons in our wires. It's fucking around with things.
This is like the end of Shocker where he just like, I'm fucking nationwide now.
Exactly.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Okay, so like this all kicks off when Jack strong arms his final guest, June, who's a doctor there with a girl who's
rescued
from a cult.
Parapsychologist, like a Lorraine Warren type.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Without saying she's a psychic.
Yes, yeah. She's definitely more science-based than anything else, but she's...
But the parascience.
She's brave enough to admit that, like, maybe there's some stuff we don't know, and it's all in this talisman. There's so much talisman work in this movie where it's like, I command you by Abraxas to stay back.
Interesting, though, that she's using the weird culty beliefs of the cult she was rescued from. It's like she's still in this belief system, so it's what will subdue her.
Oh, you think that's what it is? She's just like, she hasn't quite cracked out of it yet. We haven't deprogrammed the girl, so we got to use her language. I thought maybe it was the scientist sort of coming at it incredibly skeptical and then having to sort of relent and admit, oh, maybe there's something here. Because the little girl...
Well, she definitely believes the girl is truly possessed, don't you think?
Ooh, I'm not sure. I think she's still sort of on the fence about it. I think she wants to believe that she did write a book called Conversations with the Devil, right? Isn't that the name of the book?
Yes.
Or Communing with the Devil or something like that. So, yeah, maybe she's come fully around and be like, nah, this was a bad one. I was really assuming that she had some sort of mental illness, but it turns out, devil. They have a whole hypnosis sequence where they call upon this demon, and it's real exorcist style. Her face contorts. She starts splitting open. She's getting real mean about
shit. She's getting sassy.
She's getting real sassy live on TV.
She's swearing.
She's levitating in front of everybody. Which, obviously, the skeptic can't handle, and he's constantly... Like, there's a lot of good work with that skeptic, sort of in the behind sequences, where he's walking around, checking the floor, looking at gear, talking to audience members. He's really doing the detective work of figuring out how this is all bullshit. But ultimately, we find out that, yes, the devil is real, and he's here live on UBC tonight. Killing people, splitting heads open. There are some great special effects in this movie, man.
I think that's my only point of contention with the film is there are some fun, like they go there, which I was pleasantly surprised about. Like, I wasn't expecting to see worms and creatures and...
Oh, and that fucking worm comes shooting out of his goddamn eyeball. It's huge. Again, big year for sandworms, guys. Like, we got Dune, we got Beetlejuice 2, we got Late Night with the Devil. That's a big worm.
But because they are leaning towards the fact that Abraxas is this vain demon who really likes the camera, all of the practical effects have like a static digital effect to them.
Okay, well, sure, that's a bit of a touch that I could have done without.
I mean, it is definitely used for hiding your seams, like when Lily, the possessed girl's head finally splits open and like all the powers of God and the devil are coming out of her split open head.
It looks so good. What are you talking about?
It's just got like a staticky filter over
God,
it.
I loved it. I thought it looked awesome.
No, I do dig it.
So great.
I don't understand it, but I dig it.
No, I don't get it at all. Who cares? It's so much fun.
This is far too much for a broadcast we all moved on.
It's a movie. Movies should look fake. I'm fine with it. I'll say, like, if that's a bit of a gripe of yours, I'll say that I don't think any of the behind-scenes stuff is justified. I do love the idea of seeing a blend of the live broadcast and then behind-the-scenes footage that was shot that's been previously unreleased. They're sort of editing it together so we have one continuous look at what's happening.
It's the moments of the film where it breaks from found footage because they're having private conversations in which there wouldn't be a camera there.
You would push the camera away.
Yeah.
People are being assholes to each other or saying things about the show you wouldn't want anybody to know.
Well, once we've like broken for commercial break, we don't act like the camera itself is a cameraman who's trying to get B-roll footage.
Yeah.
The characters never look at the camera during those moments. So I think we're breaking the fourth wall a bit. And it's just like we've gone to a commercial break and now we're not in a broadcast anymore.
But Michael Ironside 100% says at the beginning of the movie that this is behind the scenes footage.
I know, but I'm just saying, suspending disbelief here, we're not in footage at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's what it's supposed to be, but the way that these people talk to each other, there's no way that they would say this with a camera.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the only downside to it.
Especially, too, because Christu, halfway through the broadcast, vomits a bunch of black stuff, and then they have to, like, escort him to the emergency room.
Yeah.
We find out he dies on the way. And so, like, why would you be saying that, like, keep it hush-hush, broadcast?
To the camera.
Exactly, if there's actually a camera there.
You wouldn't put that on tape. There's a great moment where Jack Delroy is coming back from commercial and like, all right, everybody, we're having a little bit of fun tonight.
I love when he lights a cigarette. He has one puff of it and then he gives it to like a crew
I know,
member.
Like, in between the scenes.
Yeah.
I know. He's just got like 10 seconds. You're like, oh, okay, let's get the fucking devil out here. You know, or he's like having a glass of scotch. Like, Christu has died and we hear an ambulance go off in the distance and he's like, ugh. 10 minutes later, when crazy shit is happening, people are swearing on camera. We're bringing the devil out in the 70s and he gets the news that the Nielsen ratings are going through the roof and they're just like celebrating, having scotch in front of everybody. Oh, this is so fucking good. He has to like contain a smile when he's like, I don't think we've ever had the devil live on TV. Like he knows that he just fucking got his show renewed for another 10 seasons. That's all great stuff. But as they try to continue on with the rest of the show, the demon starts to sort of like reveal information about Jack. Like, good to see you again, Jack. Oh, I haven't seen you again since you were in that weird rich person cult with the tall tree. another wrinkle.
We talked about in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, that's a weird detail. Michael Ironside's like, oh yeah, and also by the way, he's got some really powerful friends who are maybe they're involved in some occult shit. It's actually totally a real maybe rich person cult. I think it's just
rich people being fucking rich people.
Yeah, just like, hey, how are we going to influence the stock market this year? Like, it's probably basically that. It's a whole bunch of
people. You don't think it's a lizard cabal?
Well, I mean, even if it's a lizard cabal, they're meeting up to be like, we should all short GameStop, right?
I can just picture the big owl being like, how are we going to fuck with the little guy today?
Let's take away that video game.
Let's light some candles about it. Okay. I do love, though, just like reading into all that shit. This movie really taps into all of my weird niche interests, like James Randi and what is it called? The Grove.
The Grove.
The something Grove. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called either. They've been riffing on it in a bunch of stuff. It was in House of Cards. It's in this. It's in a bunch of other things. Ultimately, it's just he's in like a cabal of rich people who he finds out later on have definitely sold, oh, not his own soul, his wife's soul to the devil.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're in such a dream sequence at the end. It's so like, I get that, but it's not clear enough.
A lot of people seem to have a problem with the hallucinatory sequence. And I
because when he sees her again, he goes through the night owl door and he's in.
This sounds nonsensical. The way we're laying it out, it doesn't make any sense.
He's in her hospital bed or her hospice bed, or basically her deathbed.
Yeah.
And She's like, you gotta stab me with the ritual dagger that we got from Lily's house. Like, did he kill her on her deathbed? Or is this just the literal representation of what he did? Like, he condemned her soul?
That's exactly what I think it is. Okay. I think he made a deal with the devil. It's like, you can either offer up your soul or somebody else's. The same way that Guy offers up Rosemary and Rosemary's Baby.
I don't know if it was necessarily a choice, though, because...
Oh, you don't think so? You think he just, like, signed in blood and they were like, don't worry, we'll send the bill later?
Kinda. Like, I think the devil chooses, okay, well, you can have everything you want, but you won't have your partner by your side. Everything is a catch. It's the monkey's paw. Like, you get what you wanted, but it costs... The conditions are shitty.
Okay, so you're thinking he signs this deal before she's diagnosed with cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's interesting. I guess I like that more. Because then it's like, oh, shit, this is totally my fault. I can't say anything about it. There's nothing I can do. And mm-hmm. also, I have a bit of a vested interest.
But you would also have suspicions, too. I don't know if he 100% knows that was the devil's, like, coming for his due.
Mm. But there's a quiet little
But there's
thought.
A little bit of guilt about it. Like, did
Maybe.
I?
Maybe.
Was this real? But so he hasn't had complete success, though.
No.
So what was the deal? Was the deal just to get on TV?
I think his deal was to... become the number one late night show. I like to assume that he'd made...
Well, the devil's going real slow about it.
Yeah.
I guess he is just coming back from his wife's death, so maybe the deal was more recent.
I always assume he definitely made this deal before she died, whether or not it was before her cancer diagnosis or not. I think when I first watched it, I assumed it was she'd already had... I mean, she's already been diagnosed with cancer. They've already told us she only has maybe 6 months left to live. Like, who cares if I sacrifice her soul? She would want this.
I mean, that's still terrible, but you're giving her way more credit. Because so in the beginning, in the opening, we're establishing the universe and basically everything that's going to come into play.
Yeah.
The narrator mentions that she got this rare lung cancer despite never smoking a day in her life. Like,
yeah.
It seems like it's a surprise to the doctors mm-hmm. that she's contracted this form of lung cancer.
Yeah.
It seems like it's an anomaly.
In that narration, we also outline his insatiable lust for becoming the number one talk show. It's the only thing that drives him. But they still have a loving relationship despite that. It's... the way Michael Ironside, the way the narrator outlines it in the beginning, it's almost like normally you would expect this to be the thing that ruins their relationship. But for some reason, they're able to still love each other, even though he probably cares about this TV show more than her. And I'm really up in the air now about when he makes this deal, because I had always just assumed he sacrifices her after her diagnosis.
What is it? But it doesn't really make a difference.
It doesn't really make a difference ultimately, but like one way or another.
My biggest question was like, did he actually kill her? Like, did he sacrificially kill her? But yeah, I think that's a literal interpretation. Like, you condemned her to death.
Yeah, and that was a trick that the devil is playing on him, because when we come out of the hallucinatory sequence after he has physically stabbed his wife with the knife of Abraxas or whatever, it's like It's the same as Mandy, right? Like, get me the horn of Abraxas. We come out of the hallucinatory sequence and we're in the studio looking at live footage from the TV, and he has killed this little girl live on TV.
I don't know if it's live on TV anymore because there's nobody in the studio. Everybody has run away because her head is split open and she's been conducting electricity.
I guess you would assume somebody in the control room at some point, just the head of UBC would be like, just cut to cartoons, goddammit!
Woody Woodpecker again!
Yeah, there's no way the Cavendish Corporation wants their name on this. They can pull some strings. We're watching Woody Woodpecker.
Because they went to the hallucinatory sequence, it was a really artful way to end the movie in getting us away from... like, as soon as her head split open and she started just, like, spewing violence everywhere, I was like... how are we going to get away from here? How are we going to end this? Nobody could get near her.
No, yeah. People are dying left, right, and center. People are getting their heads twisted around.
R.I.P. Gus.
R.I.P. Gus. Yeah, it's a fucking bloodbath on there. I like the hallucinatory sequence. I think it's really good. And especially because we, like you mentioned, like we go through footage that we've already seen, like highlight reels.
I think it's all fun. I feel like it's not fully clear.
It's not fully baked yet.
Something needs to be, I don't know, like, I don't fully follow it.
The question is whether or not we're in his head or whether we're in the film, right?
Yeah, because there's all of these ideas, too. And I mentioned this, and I don't know if you feel the same way, that they kind of offhand mention that Abraxas is like a really vain demon. And when Lily first comes on camera, she's only staring at the cameras. Like, when we go to camera two, she knows that we've gone to camera two, and she moves her eyes over to the next camera.
She's like, always looking down the barrel at fucking camera.
Yeah, she's very... Think of the narcissist who's always looking at themselves in a mirror. Yeah. That's how Abraxas is about the cameras.
Yeah.
And so at the end, when everything kind of goes crazy, I'm like, has the demon just become the broadcast? Like, is the demon just... Shocker style in the technology now? Because it obviously doesn't need the host body anymore, because the demon itself commands Jack Delroy. We keep calling him David Desmalchian. He ends up killing Lily, the girl who was the host body.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming at this point the demon doesn't need the host body.
No, not at all. It was all...
Because it's in the TV!
It's a great monkey's paw story, man. Like, be careful what you wish for. He definitely got what he asked for. He is the number one show on television that night, but not for the way that he... Not like this! Oh, never like this! Like, that's the classic story.
I love thinking, though, that he made a deal with the devil to, like, be the number one TV host, and to do that, the demon just goes on the show and causes hell.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think demons would be more powerful than having to literally go and be a guest on the show. Like, oh, yeah. I'll get you number one
ratings.
I'll
get you number one. Yeah, no, like, I'm the guy. I'm the talent. You should have just brought me on from day one, baby. Man, nobody gets a lawyer to look over this contract, eh? Like, you gotta put...
There's no time!
You gotta at least have a time frame in there. I want to be the number one talk show for 11 years. Like, you gotta put a number on it.
You know, the devil has been leaning on peer pressure for thousands of years, and it never hasn't worked for him.
The devil is a used car salesman, right? Like, I'd hate for you to miss out on this deal. You gotta just buy it right now. Sign on the line. Let's go. Don't call your wife. You don't need to talk to your wife about this. You're a man. You making decisions around here. Like, that's
I'm
all
only gonna offer you this deal today.
Yeah, and I don't mention this to everybody. I just like the cut of you. Jack,
I promise I'm not going to make this a twist on what you actually want. I'm going to give you a premium A grade, best on television.
Yeah, absolutely. And that evil laugh I'm going to give right after we shake hands, that's just a tick. That's just a nervous tick I got.
I got Tourette's.
Oh, man. I like this movie a lot. This movie's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's not without its faults, whatever. Like, it's so many movies these days where you build this premise and this world and these rules, and then I think it's natural.
Endings are hard.
Endings, that's what it comes down to, man. Endings are hard. So many movies are just like, oh, what a great idea. What a great execution. Ooh, we didn't quite know how to finish this, did we?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Something both of these movies have in common is that the first 90% of the film, I would say 100% perfect. I would give it 100%.
But here's the only thing that I'll really sort of like lean with the filmmakers on this one. Shouldn't you break the rules in the finale? Isn't that the whole idea? Like, you set up these rules and these things you're supposed to do and stuff that can't happen.
So I guess my only complaint is that it is definitely a Rosemary's Baby rug pull at the end.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel the weight of it like I feel like I should.
Oh.
I want to feel as horrified that guy turned on Rosemary in Rosemary's Baby in this. And I don't know if there's enough time to let that sit. I don't know if it's clear enough that I'm like, you know what I mean? I want to be shocked.
No, I know what you mean. It's definitely one of the things that stops me from giving it like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes kind of deal. And same with the behind the scenes footage. Like, I love the idea. I think maybe there's a chance that they never explained what that footage was and we were supposed to be in a cinematic version. And then just people had questions, test screenings, audiences were like, I don't know what we're looking at.
I don't remember what was different from the version we watched, because we watched a really early press screening from a film festival, and we had heard there were changes, and I can't remember what.
From what I've been told, the hallucinatory sequence is tighter.
Mm.
I don't know that I noticed a huge difference, but that's what I've been told.
I mean, they didn't get rid of the AI commercial cards.
I mean, people gave those commercial cards way too much of a hard time, but no, they did not get rid of them.
You know what? That takes some balls, though. I guess it was already at release. They were like, what are we going to do?
Yeah,
like,
it was already in the
theater. The skeleton's hands are fucked.
It's a tool in the kit, so they use the tool.
I disagree with you.
Okay, well, let's leave it at that. Let's not get into a fight here. Okay, what's your rating, AI images included, of Late Night with the Devil?
Well, and I'm going to do AI images excluded, because it's a complicated issue and we haven't figured out yet how we're going to handle it. But I feel like if you have money to pay artists, you should pay artists.
God, they paid some artists to use AI.
Did they, though?
I don't know. I
That's
wasn't
what
there.
I'm saying.
And your rating?
I'm going to give it a... What are you giving it?
AI images included, I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 4. I think it's a good movie. I don't know why I'm bringing up the AI thing. Like, it bums me out that became like the cornerstone of the conversation when this movie was
released. Because the movie is very good in its own right. And
so many people worked on this movie.
And also, if somebody in Hollywood's going to get flack, like, have it be the fucking Avengers people. We know that the backdrops are about to be fake.
Why do we got to take on the indie filmmakers?
Yeah, like, we know extras aren't real anymore and that the entire extra industry is going to be kaput because they generate human beings out of thin air. Like, let's have it not be the $2 million films. Like, let's fuck with the $400 million films where they have the money to employ people and they're not gonna anymore. So that's what I'm saying about that. Uh-huh. I'm going to give it... I want to give it a 4 out of 4 just because it's banging. Like, it's flying on all Kim cylinders.
Okay.
Found footage.
Flying on all Kim cylinders.
Found footage, devil stuff, TV broadcasts, 70s. We got skeptics. We've got psychics. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 4.
All right, 4 out of 4.
It's definitely going on my top list of the year.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it was on my top list of 2023 just because I think we saw it in 2023. And I was like, oh, I guess it didn't come out yet. All right, well, it'll be in the 2024 list as well then.
Yeah, it's banging.
We'd love to hear what you think of Late Night with the Devil. This is a movie that I think a lot of people have seen. A lot of people are still talking about. Some people are still discovering it. Like I mentioned, it's on Shudder right now. Go check it out. We both really liked it. We're probably going to be talking about it again at the end of the year when we put together our top 10 horror movies of 2024. But hit us up in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord and let us know what you thought of this found footage freak fest.
Yeah, if you want more Nightmare on Film Street content, we have a Fiend Club on Patreon. We have merch. We have tons of different social media channels where we're doing videos and all kinds of different content now. You can basically head to the hub and find everything Nightmare on Film Street at nofspodcast.com/go. G-O.
Yeah.
That's all of our links are there.
Yeah. The Fiend Club, we had been for a while talking about the Universal Classic Monsters, but that's also where we talk about modern movies that are in the theater. The regular feed of the podcast, we're normally talking about 80s, 90s movies that we all grew up with. If you want to hear what we think of modern releases in the theater, the Fiend Club's where to check them out. All the best and all the worst movies of 2024, we're mentioning them over there at nofspodcast.com/go.
That's it for us this week. Until next time, I'm Kim.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.